Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Shop Talk Joe. We have two perfect sponsors for you this week. Environments for Humans are promoting their CSS DevConf. Commit yourself for 2 days to learn what's happening next with web building. I'm going to be there. Gina Bolton, Jonathan Snook, Val Head, Dave, the...
Rupert.
On the legendary Queen Mary. I was actually on the Instagram looking at the hashtag Queen Mary or whatever, the location version of it, just to like scope it out. It's looking pretty sweet. In Long Beach, California, that is cssdevconf.com. And Code School, with more than 45 courses covering JavaScript, HTML and CSS, Ruby, Git, iOS. Code School pairs experienced instructors with engaging content. Start learning now at Code School. I think this is the first time they've sponsored. Thanks so much, Code School. We're kind of fans anyway. We have a lot of friends at Code School. Anyway, let's kick things off.
Shopomaniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, episode 177. Ooh, boy. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris.
Yeah, Dave, Hoyer. You sound a little bit better than last time, but just still a little snottish.
Little bit, yeah, got the old just booger nose.
Vitamin C, Dave. And with us we have the illustrious Sarah Drasner. Hey, Sarah.
Thanks for
joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Got burned by the horns. Everybody gets
sorry. It's a ritual here on the Shop Talk Show is just to just stampede over everyone.
I got to meet Sarah just not so long ago. We were, I've known your work for a while, but I think it was the first time we got to meet was at CSS Conf, right? In New York?
Yeah, in New York. We got to talk on the same stage that Louis C.K. talks at for his comedy, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah. What was that little club called? Carolyn's on Broadway?
Yeah, Carolyn's on Broadway. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was really fun. Good one.
And we get to talk.
Yeah, we get to see each other soon at the CSS Dev Conf, too, who's the sponsor also.
Nice. So the two greatest CSS conferences in the world.
Yeah. We
that's right. And you'll be at the Queen Mary as well. Fantastic. So Sarah does all kinds of interesting stuff. Maybe you know her for some of her work at CodePen. That's Estras. It's kind of like your gang name. Estras.
Yeah, I wish I had kept it consistent like you guys did. You know, now it's kind of an SEO nightmare, but it's too late to fix. Yeah.
I know, it's tough, isn't it? Like, you can kind of change it on Twitter without too much trouble, but I'm not sure how they... I wonder how they handle it, because they let you change your username kind of willy-nilly. But what happens with, like, links to existing tweets out there? Like, if you blogged, do they just break?
Yeah, I don't know. I used to work for the people who built it, so I guess I could ask them. Be like, what happened?
Are you ex-Twitter? I didn't even know that.
Oh, I'm not, but I used to work for the people who were the back-end team, like some of the bigger back-end team members. So, yeah.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I wonder, because it seems like, I don't know, breaking, that it seems like that would happen a lot, because people change their usernames like fairly commonly. Anyway, that's quite the aside here already. you are a San Francisco person.
Yeah. Yeah, I live in San Francisco with a lot of other techies.
Yeah, and kind of love it, right? Every time I talk to you about it, you're like, I want to, you know, show you the real San Francisco kind of thing, which is, as much as I lived out there, I lived in the Bay and just never really, I just didn't get up very often. And when I did, I probably did the cliche things and not the cool San Francisco.
Well, I'm cheating because I'm from here originally, so I know a lot of people around here and stuff. So that's, yeah, it,
are
I mean,
really
it's...
really born and raised?
Yeah.
Whoa, hold on. Even San Franciscan. What? Goodness.
I feel like that's a little rare, isn't it? Maybe not. I mean, maybe I just don't know anything. It seems like it's definitely a city that a lot of people move in and out of.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I did, too, for many years. I didn't live here for like a decade, all in all, probably. But, yeah, I think a lot of my friends who grew up here moved away to mostly L.A. So.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Just going south.
Yeah.
And you're, I mean, you're obviously tech because you're on the show and you work with SVG and animation and design, but then, and then use some of that stuff, at your job at Trulia, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I work at Trulia. Yeah. I mean, mostly like I manage their, component library, which is like their version of Bootstrap.
Really?
Yeah. So, but
that's
then also
pretty awesome.
Like,
so if you have, if you probably have some opinions about style guides and stuff, if you, you are the master of theirs.
Well, I got really lucky cause I got to inherit a code base that Nicole Sullivan worked on. So that was, that's pretty, that's like the cream of the crop for OOCSS code bases.
Nice. So it was kind of already in good shape by the time you got it.
Oh, and yeah.
Now you get
definitely.
To be its, now you got to be its shepherd.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. And she had everything really nicely set up. So it's pretty easy to like make changes that are site wide.
Yeah. That's quite the testimony that it's not just like somebody can roll in and make a style guide and claim it's amazing and peace out. It's like, this is like the continuation of that story is that, no, the style guide's still in place. It still looks good. It's still serving the company good, theoretically years later.
Yeah, and especially if you need to make changes. I mean, I think like inheriting an enormous code base that like touches that many pages and then also is seen by 60 million people a month is like could be daunting, but it's actually pretty nicely, you know, it's nicely organized and it's nicely documented. So I got really lucky for sure.
CSS people, it can be done.
I don't know, man. I've heard CSS is too hard lately.
CSS is over.
Yeah. Well, we might have to do that episode. We don't often do topical episodes, you know, but we may try that in kind of season four or whatever we're calling the thing, you know. Maybe you guys have seen some of that. I said you guys, you're not supposed to say that. I'm such a jerk. Oh. I gotta work.
No. I don't care. I well, still say it too. I actually say fellas a lot. So.
Yeah, well, that's even more gendery, isn't it? Well, maybe not. But they're probably equally, but there's so many good alternatives.
Yeah, I know. I try to say hi all and hi everyone instead, but fellas is so old-timey. I kind of like that.
Right, it's okay to like old-timey things, although yeah, we just kind of gotta watch it for the good of the world. I kind of ended up writing a post about it on CSS Tricks because it was such a hot topic at the conference we were at.
Oh yeah, that CSS I think that con. Would like it seemed like a fight was going to break out or something. not really, but just I mean,
no,
I think there were a lot of
more
like
calm than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it was like pretty heated, kind of like. I think that was the only talk where people were really kind of, you could feel the like anxiety in the room lifting and stuff.
Certainly.
I feel like we should catch everyone up. The kind of joke, I guess, we're dancing around it is there's a big contingent kind of coming out of React.js, right? That you should inline your styles in your components to manage that complexity. Is that
to the level that you don't even ship CSS at all? You don't even have a CSS.
Not
file.
Even no CSS file. Everything's like an array or a JSON object. That's your style.
Essentially, right? Yeah. And you can still manage. There's still some separation of concerns and stuff. It's easy to get up in arms over this. It seems like, you know, like there's obviously some downsides. It seems to me as a longtime CSS person, but you kind of have to check yourself and be like, to what level is this actually interesting? What is it actually solving? Who's actually doing it? What kind of benefits are they getting out of it? You need to be able to see those things and then refute those arguments if you can. And it very much seems like to me that these kind of concepts can live together, that there's certainly some like cool things you can do with like data and styling and reactive styling based on situations and state on the page that can live alongside layout and overall typography and stuff that this probably doesn't need to be quite as like super fancy dynamic as everything else. Like
yeah,
it seems like Mama Bear's porridge might be just right on this one.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, Chris, you and I have talked about this a little bit earlier. Like, I've kind of found increasingly, like, I think it used to be that, like, people would be like, best practice is this one thing, and we're all going to do it this one way. And now the web is just so big, and it's used for so many different purposes that, like, it doesn't make sense to think like that anymore because we're all solving for different problems. And so, you know, the guy who was giving the talk actually had a really good use case for it. He was talking about data analyzation or data Yeah, like data visualizations and stuff, and that seems like a really good use case for React. Well, code base like kind
of
mine.
In the case where you couldn't make a class for all the like infinite amount of states that a data viz thing can be in because it's based on such dynamic data. Well, that's a perfect use case for it, of course, you know. But then to say that, you know, I should design CSS tricks like this, even though there's like a handful of CSS, you know, that is very modular, and it's like of course it doesn't make sense on all apps, and I think they would, I would hope, agree with that, but maybe not. I mean, there's definitely some opinion that you know, CSS is over.
Yeah.
So how, like, Trulia, the product you work on is no chump. It's very well designed. It's very big. How do you manage ever-growing CSS components or in your code base? Is it just adhering to kind of the strict OOCSS schema, or how do you kind of manage that?
Yeah, so actually I just started here a couple months ago, but I have kind of managed code bases that are like this before, maybe not at this scale. Basically the kind of line that we dance between is like making sure that everybody has the tools that they need so that they're not writing inline styles or like, you know, overrides and stuff, but also not so many tools that people can't find things easily, that people aren't like confused if they should be using this padding or that padding, and, you know, like keeping things refined and enough rules so that people know what to do without feeling too restricted. So that becomes kind of like a balancing act, and it's a pretty interesting one, I think. So yeah, I feel like I'm kind of given this like neat little logic puzzle, and it's fun to kind of figure it out.
That's an excellent analogy. I love that, thinking of CSS and layout and stuff as a logic puzzle and solving it in like the most efficient way possible, and, you know, not cheating.
Yeah, and I mean, some of that, of course, has to do with like trying to build stuff myself to make sure that I am not just like, don't do it this way, and then it can't be done or something like this. So yeah, mm-hmm. A couple of those things too.
Yeah, for me, the cascade can be your enemy or your helper, really, and it's tough to. You know, are you adding cascade problems, or are you making something really smart and reusable? That's kind of I think you deal with that in JavaScript as well. You know, I don't think you escape troubles just by putting it in a variable in JavaScript. You know,
yeah.
And then, you know, it's not cacheable. It's really hard to dig through and read. You know, there's problems, other problems, I guess. I'm and no media queries really blows it. no pseudo selectors.
They have answers for all this stuff is the thing. You know, that's what you kind of have really careful about how you approach the
or you'll get shot down.
Yeah, kind of, right? It's kind of like trying to have like a debate about religion, right? Because you might have a point, but like the well-argued ones are like, well, but it says in this thing and this thing and this, you know, like it's dangerous. Or arguing politics with somebody who's like really ready to for a rebuttal on every single thing that you say, and then you just
Chris, the spaghetti monster invented CSS, so that's why I'm using it. So.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the code base has a lot of CSS and JavaScript mixed together as components because that, you know, they kind of have to live together. And the interesting thing for me coming in here, and part of the reason why I was excited about this job, was that I'm getting to like kind of reframe animations. In the traditional OOCSS library used to be such that you just took an animation and added it to something. And I'm kind of doing away with that a little bit and like reorganizing and reframing so that everybody uses the same easing function, but like they all have a certain animation attached to them. So kind of like purposeful things aren't just like, you know, you can just make it spin if you want or something like that. So, you know, because the animation's kind of like one of my passions. So
you want to do it choice, like tastefully and in not just like, yeah, at include spin on navigation links.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of like, I like Val Head's whole like invisible animation concepts, you know, like that, like really good animation like eases the UX and like you don't necessarily know it's there all the time kind of stuff.
Yeah, she does a good job at kind of evangelizing that concept, which is really important. We just had a little minor post on CSS Tricks about, oh, by the way, Sarah is the newest part-time writer for us at CSS Tricks. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Yay. Excellent.
So look forward to more stuff from Sarah on CSS Tricks. We posted one, a guest article that I thought was very good on Angular Animate. And so Angular, the framework, has some animation tools in it. But what's weird to understand about Angular is that that module that they offer doesn't actually do any animation. It's largely like a class toggling kind of thing. And it has kind of callbacks and stuff. It's like useful for applying your own CSS or JavaScript animations. So it did a good job of explaining, like, this is how you do it in Angular land, and this is how you write the CSS that goes along with it, or bring your own JavaScript animation library kind of thing, which is a good article. And of course, one of the first comments was, I hate animation. You know, it was one of those kind of, you know, maybe that was disingenuous, but they were like, I don't think anything should ever move on a website. When I click something or whatever, I want it to immediately be there. And it was funny because it had a kind of Oscar the Grouch feeling to it, but they're also right. You know, they're also like, I can see how animation gets in the way. And if you notice animate, if it's not, an animated scene or the purpose of the thing is animated, if it's a UI animation of like a modal box showing up or a drop down menu coming up, I can see how that gets so easily overused, or it's a little too slow. You know, people made it 0.5 seconds when it really should have been 0.2, you know, because it's just annoying to wait for. It doesn't add anything to the understanding of what's going on.
Right.
Whereas Val has examples where it's just like, well, let's say you add something to a list. It really does add to the like cognitive understanding of what's going on. If like the two list items animate, separate, and one slides in, you're like, oh, I see exactly what happened there. Where if that happened instantaneously, it's like, whoa, what happened? Things shifted around, but I don't understand exactly what happened. UI can help there.
Yeah. I've been really interested in context shifting lately. Like the idea that like if you're at work and you have to like switch between a bunch of tasks, you start to feel kind of frustrated and like you're not getting as much done. And I think that that's true in UX also, and that animation can actually help with some of those things. Like if you have a nav that has one view at the top of the page, but if as you scroll, it gets kind of tucked away somewhere. Like some small pieces like that are done, you know, very carefully and like with like the purpose of being intuitive can be really nice. And when it's done wrong, you definitely, like that's why animation gets a bad rap, is I kind of feel like, you know, when it's an afterthought or somebody just puts it together because they're like, oh, look what I can do, then it starts to get like annoying for the visitor instead of like a nice thing. So yeah,
I like to, on my blog, I like every paragraph to fly into the page from a different coordinate. Is that kind of what you're getting at? That's the deep immersive experience.
Do they come in as flying toasters and then they settle into paragraphs as they could? It's just like eventually words
just zips in, and I want your, like, you know, like,
nice if it feels a little arbitrary too.
Yeah,
like, the speed is different each time.
I want your like millions of years of biology to just to say duck or dodge. You know, that's kind of like that's exactly what I want the user to feel about my product is, ah, oh God, it's coming at me. That's exactly what I'm going for when I'm designing.
It's coming right for us.
Well, I think Tim Holman does some really cool stuff like that, where it is just like, you know, anti-patterns, and he's just like, okay, what's the worst thing that I can do to you right now? And they're just kind of hilarious.
The scroll drapes thing, because every time I get caught in a set of drapes in my house, I'm so relaxed and calm. I'm just kidding. Oh, I'm going to get some emails. I'm sorry. Leps.
I like donut charts. I think they're super rad.
Something we can all agree on.
Yeah, so Sarah is, as I like your banner on Twitter. It's Ludo from Labyrinth with Sarah Friend. That's excellent. Sarah has become a good friend. We were involved with CodePen 2U through the CodePen meetup out in San Francisco just last week or 2 weeks ago or so, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That so was I sadly really had to miss, but that's cool. So, and you're doing the picks this weekend, CodePen, and it's just all over the place.
Yeah, just, you know, trying to, like, do everything on CodePen that I can because I love that place. So just, like, getting in there. Yeah, I like the community that surrounds CodePen a lot. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's been really killing it lately. I enjoy kind of stepping away from it occasionally to not that I'm trying to avoid it. I mean, just like it's so tempting for me to be like, oh my god, the community's doing something. Let me latch onto it and try to, you know, I don't know, not control it, but just like be extra involved or whatever. But I find that it's been kind of fun to watch these creative coding challenges kind of thing. CCC, the pick a theme weekends are really like doing a great job, and we've done nothing to not that we're trying to not help. I'd like to help if we can, but it's kind of like fun to just not be involved, just kind of let the community just do whatever they want, you know.
Yeah, it's been pretty awesome, and I love seeing the variations on the theme. Like, everybody has kind of like a different taste and a different language and a different way of working with something. So like just seeing like the same pattern and objects and like how much variance you can get within that is pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. To explain what we're talking about a little bit on CodePen, there's a kind of core group of people doing it, but lots of people have been involved. But I think Tiffany kind of heads it up a lot of the time. So she posts a blog post that explains it. It's like a theme. So for example, last weekend the theme was neon hexagons. I think.
Hexagons and neon.
So that's just a general theme, and you can do whatever you want with it. I believe there's pretty much no rules whatsoever. You want to do some SVG stuff, some Canvas stuff, some CSS stuff, whatever. You could write a poem probably about it, and it would get in there, and then they make a collection and just kind of pull them all together. But the idea is just that there's other people out there in the world kind of thinking about it and having fun around this idea, you know, just a loose concept that ties a bunch of art together.
Yeah, I think my favorite one was this Holy Space Cows weekend. That was
that was pretty out there.
I was just like, yes, this is going to be so much fun. So, yeah, it's really nice to kind of like just see, like, you know, there's kind of like there are a lot of people on CodePen, and then there's like a bunch of people who spend a lot of time on it, including me. And, you know, just to see what everybody's going to do and kind of like go through all of the pens and talk to each other and stuff. It's nice.
Fantastic. Thanks for the glowing endorsement there. I think there's more stuff that will be related to this stuff as we move forward into the questions, but we have some picked out, so we might as well do them, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tracy Dunn here writes in with a question that we get, you know, once in a while here on Shop Talk Show. She wants to know, how many miles will 5W30 synthetic oil last for in a 2010 Lexus ES350?
Oh, that's a good question, Tracy.
Yeah, Sarah said she took some auto shop in high school.
Yeah, uh-huh. I took it in high school, and that's probably dating like how old I am. That was a long time ago. Now I look inside like an engine, and I'm like, this looks like a space vehicle. It's not the same at all.
It's all plastic.
Yeah, I don't have the faintest.
5W30 synthetic, I think you're going to get it, you know.
Isn't that like motorcycle oil? I thought 10W is
more. Lawnmower oil? I mean, that's, I don't know. Yeah, you're going to want to get the 10W30 synthetic, and that's going to last you 3,000-5,000 miles. The best thing to do is take it somewhere, and then put a sticker on your window, and it tells you how many miles you have left. That's what I would say.
Good luck, Tracy. For the rest of you, turns out we're not really a car. Despite the wrench in the logo.
False advertising, Chris. False advertising.
Car Talk is a different program.
You're looking for click and clack. You have tap and click. Dapovin brothers. You're on the line. Next question. Louis Novick writes in, hi there. My name is Louis Novick. I'm a front-end developer living and working in Orlando, Florida. I was extremely taken away with how creative your work is. Links to my favorites below. SarahDrasnerDesign.com. Way down when. SarahDrasnerDesign.com. Medusa. How do you go about planning storyboarding a piece? Do you sketch it first, then decide how to animate it? What's your process when coding art? That's a good question.
Oh, yeah, that is a good question. I actually
Sarah's known for that. I wonder if we should, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I just wanted to like explain to people what they're looking at when they go to these URLs. I mean, Sarah's kind of known for these like elaborate scenes that are animated and have kind of a, we'll put them in the show notes, but you should go check them out because they're like worthy of like exploring and experiencing and stuff. So, and then the question is like, how do you even start, Sarah?
Yeah, I actually do storyboard a little bit, but I kind of want to like dispel the myth that your storyboards have to look like polished comics, because I used to be scared of storyboards because I was like, wow, everybody's storyboards look really good, and that would scare me and I wouldn't want to do it, and then I would just start anyway. But it actually does cut out a lot of work, and mine look like total chicken scratches, and I mean I can draw, I just don't for those. So yeah, I do kind of like, usually I kind of go along with the premise of backwards to move forwards in my storytelling thinking. So like, I'll think about probably the last scene first and like how to slowly reveal that, if that makes any sense. So like what's the kind of punchline, or like, especially like with Medusa, you can kind of see, it's a bunch of shapes, but then it comes together and makes a face. Like, I obviously planned to have that be slowly revealed.
It would be pretty hard to do in reverse.
Yeah,
draw exactly. These abstract chunks.
So yeah, like a lot, I think a lot of my pens and things like that are kind of like built around that concept of like, what am I going to show people, and like what's like the last thing that's going to happen, basically.
Cool. That's pretty good. So Lewis, start with the end first. Hot tips for storyboarding stuff. There's more. Actually, let's do this. Did you bring up this audio one next from Jen's, Dave?
Oh, yeah, let me go get it here.
Well, I can preface the question probably. I think Jen's is going to ask about GreenSock, and GreenSock is a library that's getting pretty popular on CodePen. It's been around for a while. It's kind of an animation framework thing. I think Jen's is just going to ask about it in a kind of generic way, but I know that Sarah has worked with
it. Hey, guys.
All right.
Go for it, Dave.
Wanted to let you and your listeners know about the GreenSock animation framework. It's a new set of tools for people working with JavaScript animation that has some really cool features. For instance, it performs about 10 times faster than jQuery. It does cross-browser CSS transforms like scaling and rotating all the way back to IE6, I think. And on top of that, it has some great tools when it comes to sequencing animations. So you have timelines that can be nested inside other timelines. You can control the overriding and overlapping of animations exactly like you want it. It has a bunch of events and callbacks you can hook into. All this stuff makes it a lot easier to control your animations when they grow in size, and makes it a lot easier to maintain them over time.
Cool. That's probably so good.
Yeah,
was that jamming action
like
part of
shredding
the
shredding in the background there? Wow,
I should have done that
like just in the background here. I could have had some Guns N' Roses going.
All right,
hey guys, glad to be on the show.
instead of answering your question, I would like to shred it. Wow.
All right, so Jens was just letting
pause the show. Everyone, go get an instrument. We'll be back.
I'm going to get a tambourine.
Okay. So he's kind of giving a pitch for it and showing off how extreme and shredding it is. So I don't know anything. I'll come out of the ignorance closet. I don't know anything about GreenSock animation. So sell me, why is it good?
Oh, well, I use GreenSock for a lot of things, and I actually kind of recommend it for almost everything. I do think that there are some times with like light UI animations when you're not, you know, when you don't need to load an external resource for like a loader or something, that CSS animations make sense. But I've pretty much worked with like I even actually wrote a CSS Tricks article, like, where I benchmarked a bunch of different SVG animation libraries, and just to, like, rewrite the same animation again and again and see how that behaved. And, like, I was working with a bunch of different things at the time, but I have to say, I was really supremely impressed with GreenSock and its ability to, well, first of all, there's just like so many tools that you can use or not use. And the performance was really good and, like as good or better than native technologies, which I think is kind of amazing. And then also just the ability to, I feel like the tool set in GreenSock, like finding that was kind of like, as an animator, it really gave me a breath of fresh air. It was like, oh, I don't have to fight browsers to do the thing that I want to do. I can just kind of do everything, and it, like, the workflow I feel like is very intuitive, and you can do really long animations. I think the main thing for me is, like, aside from cross-browser stuff, is the ability to adjust timing afterwards. I haven't ever written a really long animation where I haven't adjusted timing, even like gone back to the beginning after watching the whole thing and adjusted timing. And in CSS animations, that can be kind of a painful experience because you're doing things with delays and stuff. So if you get more advanced and like more and more things happen, that process can be kind of arduous because you have to adjust all of the timing that follows it. Whereas with GSAP, you can just kind of adjust, and then you can actually even animate your animation, so you can take like a full scene and just be like, okay, everything go, you know, 1.2 times faster, and it's super easy to do that, those kind of adjustments, and the easing functions are great.
At its core, it's just like, I can take a div, I can rotate it, scale it, move it around, change the opacity. I can do all the things that you'd expect in animation, right? It's just, it has its own little syntax for that. So I'd load up the GreenSock library and then use its syntax to do those things, right?
Absolutely. And you can actually even tween CSS values too. So it's not like, it's not limited to what JavaScript's usually limited to. And, you know, they have all sorts of plugins, like the one where you can draw SVG and like make the SVG look like it's drawing itself. You can do that in CSS by finding the like stroke length and animating that, but you just basically say 0 to 100 and it does it for you. So like a lot of these things, you know, are, you know, smaller things that when you like have a larger complex animation, add up to a lot of time saved where you can just be creative instead and like working on the animation instead of like fighting your tooling. So, yeah.
Does it give you like a timeline, like Flash style or anything like that? Or do you just kind of have to mentally
It's kind of mentally maintained, but like you could, if you wanted to, you can, I've totally added sliders to my animations before and you can see where you are and you can like scrub backwards and forwards if that's what you would like to do. It's super easy to add one of those to like, just like attach a jQuery slider to master or something, to a master.
There's chaining though, isn't there? It's kind of like do this and then dot and then do another thing and it will kind of like wait for the first one to be done before it does the next one, doesn't it? Kind of work.
Yeah, so the default is that, and then you can also say like, you know, the like regular JavaScript syntax, which is like negative like equals,
right? So start
five,
this next, you know, one a little bit before the end of the last one,
right? And you can also add relative labels, which I tend to do the most, which is like you say at the beginning like, okay, this is add a relative label called start, and then just have everything either be at start or be like a certain number of seconds after start, because then it's kind of easier for me to keep track of like, okay, I want this thing to be at the same time as this one, and then I want this one to be a couple seconds later. And also, if you ever have a loop, it's not like, then if you have a loop, you definitely need a relative label, otherwise it's going to wait. The next one's just going to wait forever, you know? So it's kind of, I find it easier to use relative labels, but I think other, you know, it really depends on your workflow and what you're doing.
That's just kind of like good API design in a sense that it offers all these different ways to do that. And I don't know. You get the fact that you get a timeline dive by default is pretty interesting. You certainly don't get that in CSS. You know, if you wanted to do one animation and then the next one, you have to be like, okay, well, how long was that first one? Let me check that out. But the length of that animation is up in the animation value, not in the keyframes, because keyframes don't have any sense of how long they're going to take. That's totally arbitrary. It's like, it's CSS stuff is more complicated in a sense.
Yeah, in some ways it is, because you're kind of defining what you want to have happen, and then you're calling it into action. So it's like two different places that you're kind of keeping those things together. I still use CSS animations. I have not thrown the baby out with the bathwater. I just do find GreenSock very easy to work with, and I prefer working with it like more than 9 times out of 10. And you know, I'm pretty happy to just, you know, they don't pay me. I don't work for them. I really like their tool. I also think they have really good support. Like if you are working with that, like GSAP, and their forums are amazing. There's like tons of helpful people on the forums, and you can usually just find the answer right away, which I think for us developers, like that, I mean, that's a whole reason why I will use or not use a technology right there, is like whether or not I can easily find something on Stack Overflow or in a forum is like a make it or break it for some newer technologies and stuff. So, there's that. And then also, you know, Jack and Carl, the writers for it, are really open to feedback and like hearing about your ideas. You know, like that stuff goes a long way.
Fantastic. So thanks, Jens, for writing in about it and evangelizing it. And I've met Carl as well. He came to the CodePen New York meetup and gave a talk about it. That was pretty darn cool. So I'm a fan as well. I think their library is pretty darn cool. Check it out, GreenSock. Not a sponsor, but I'm going to do a sponsor right now if you're ready.
Nice. We need the audio.
We should one of these seasons, maybe episode 300, we'll start doing something. CSS DevConf is coming. It's coming October 26th through 22nd. We said it's in Long Beach, California, which is kind of like the greater LA area, isn't it? I think that's the case. And there's this big giant docked boat, and in fact it has these big three smokestacks on it that look super cool, and I got to design some CodePen coasters just special for this conference only, and I designed them with those three smokestacks just to like make them like extra cool commemorative coasters for the thing. So you can get some of those if you come to this conference. But you know, me and Dave and Sarah will be there, and a bunch of other folks too. A lot of the sessions were voted based on this double blind voting system, which is pretty darn cool, which is basically like, it's not a popularity contest. It's like you're voted on the sessions based on the content of that session, and those were the winners, which is pretty cool. Let's see other points I want to make sure to mention here. There's stuff about SAS. There's stuff about visual regression testing, which is weird and complicated. Jonathan Smook will be doing the SMAX workshop, which is basically like how you should be writing CSS. So maybe catch that for sure. You're fed on the boat, which is great. Ain't no hangry people on it, which is great. You don't want to be angry at a conference. Just eat your heart out. Pause the diet. Cool. So yeah, and then once you like go and buy your ticket and get registered for it, then you get to, because it's multi-track, you get to like pick the sessions that you want to make it to, but which kind of, some people are like, oh, multi-track, then I'm gonna miss stuff. Well, you're not gonna miss the best for sure, because how they run these things is then you like vote on, you like say how much you enjoyed the sessions you went to, and the top winners of that, they repeat at the end. So the best of sessions you'll for sure get to see, which is awesome. So enjoy. Check out cssdevconf.com. Let's do another question. What do you think, Dave?
Yep, sounds good. We got an audio question here, and I'm loading up from Frederick Creamers. Let's see here. And it is coming in.
I'm very new to design, but I like the idea of managing components in a style guide. And I'm wondering, what tools do you use for managing that? So far, I really like what I've seen about patternlab.io, but there are many other solutions, and I wonder what you think about them. Thank you for answering my question.
Okay.
Frederick loves style guides, wants to likes the idea of componentry and like building a page based on components. He's checked out Pattern Lab, which I think we've talked about a bit before on the show, which kind of has this concept of components are one of the things, but components are built from smaller parts and they can make bigger parts and stuff. It's kind of like a whole, you know, the atoms are the metaphor.
Atoms, molecules, organisms.
But sometimes it's simple as just making a pattern. I think that's how I normally approach it, is kind of a, just, you know, here's a pattern, here's a pattern, here's a pattern. Use them as you will to build pages together. And Sarah, you have some experience with this as the shepherd of...
Yeah, I mean, for the style guides that we have here, we actually have the stocks that are made with this thing called Hologram that I think actually Trulia made itself and open sourced. And you can basically write the documentation in the comments, and it compiles to
one of those things.
Yeah, so it's pretty fancy, cool stuff. And I'm actually going to be changing like a bunch of the things. Right now, it's very developer, like it's a really good tool for developers. But you know, I do both design and development, which is a possibility, by the way. So you know, I kind of like was looking at it as a developer. I'm like, this is great, but like then looking at it through my designer eyes, I was like, I don't think I could actually design a page from this documentation. Like, so I'm now starting to write guides that both can use. So like having a design download section that has Sketch and Photoshop files that have the stencils using the components that they can just download.
That almost feels a little backwards, right? Like we already have the HTML and CSS componentry ready to go in this thing. But if I'm designing a page, is that useful to me? Because I still want to move back to more desktop-y visual design-y tools like Sketch. So you're kind of taking it, moving it back to those tools?
Yeah. So basically like taking the components as they live in the library and like putting them into a Photoshop or Sketch file so that the designers, you know, like one file with all the components, one with like a stencil of like everything, like this is what this page looks like. And I think that actually kind of like helps people build and give mockups to engineers so that they can figure out where the components are, and it kind of helps the designers know, because I couldn't look at a page with map markers and then another page with like padding and like know how those went together in my head as a designer. So just making sure that both sides are accounted for, I think, is like probably the biggest thing I've found.
That's lovely, especially because the whole point of them is that they're useful. So if you have a style guide and it's not useful, you might as well not have nothing, I would think. So, Dave, have you ever done the style guide thing? That's pretty common. Dave's notorious for his delivery of tiny bootstraps.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I do for a living now. But I have used Pattern Lab, Brad Frost's Pattern Lab. It's great. It's a really thrilling way to create a website, like just with static. Or you can actually use like real data in there, but just to build out like a static version of the website. The limitation, and I think Brad and Dave would know about this, is that it's hard to get that system into production because it's, you know, very limited to like a PHP mustache workflow. So if that's not what you're using, you need something different. So, you know, it's interesting. I've built my own Pattern Labs in Jekyll before, which I actually like, and we'll probably continue to do that just because I like Jekyll quite a bit. I should blog about how I do that. Whoops. So that's what I like to do. I think mostly it's just how do you get that out. The best system though is one that can exist in production, in using real data and real, working the workings of your website. So I think which Pattern Lab you choose or which style guide system you choose, probably dictated by your technology, whether it's WordPress or Rails or whatever.
Yeah, that makes good sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very interested in how people do that at like a big scale, you know, but Because it is, like you said earlier, if you are too specific and have too many components, people won't use it because there's just too much information. I'll just write my own, you know. But if it's not specific enough and you don't have enough components, then people are like, oh, this thing doesn't work. It doesn't have my component, you know.
Yeah, how do you manage that?
It's tough. I ended up just to piece things together, ended up building out the whole site statically, you know, 20 something plus templates, just to see where the overlap was. So I had kind of a mental model of how everything did. So like this prototype, really helped me understand the whole site at large. Which has only been handy because the people I handed off code to are now coming to me and they're like, what's this thing? This looks like it's not used anywhere. And I'm like, oh, but it is. It's used on this one weird thing on this one weird page. It's kind of helps you identify these outliers. But then it's like, is that outlier something you want to invest into the system or invest it? Or do you want to just like keep it external? So it's tough.
So then you're just like a weather forecaster this seems like something that's going to be reused and this seems like not, and kind of like educated guesswork.
Yeah I mean, you kind of have to, I mean, you know, it's, I'm interested in this idea of like a web SDK or something where we all just install Polymer and then change it as necessary. Just on one browser. It's this interesting idea. It's like when you work in iOS or whatever, you have very common components. You have a toggle, a tab bar navigation, you have a list, a table, a form, like all of that is provided to you out of the box, you know. But the web does not have that feature, and that's really interesting to me. But I think like if it is something that crucial, that like reusable, you know, make a component out of it, but where
considered inline style?
I have not considered inline style yet, Chris. But that does manage some of the complexity, because if you just like rip out code, it's ripped out. You don't have to rip it out of two places. But I don't know. That's a very weak. I don't know. People get paid to work, so.
Yeah, I guess the, like the big problem with that for me isn't even like, you know, of course performance is a problem or like a consideration, but the really big thing is like what happens when you refactor? Like what happens like when, you know, a year later you, of course, because it's the web, redesign, and then do you have to go back into like every single React component? Like I don't know. I haven't worked with it enough to like really understand that yet, but like maybe I'm wrong. But like, you know, rather than when you have a code architecture for SCSS, at least, you know, you kind of change one variable and change one mixin and have it be site-wide. So
yeah, it's tough. I don't know. The problem I'm having with this component-y thing is like, you know, I had one list and then I got another design with a different list and then I made two different lists components, and then now they're kind of the same, so I'm kind of marrying them, and maybe there's some dead code, but I don't know which code is dead. And then I think that's the problem people are trying to solve, but I don't know. Hopefully I haven't turned Frederick off of style guides. I really like them. I think they're essential for any organization personally.
But. Yeah, actually, I got an email from my old work because I kind of like muscled a style guide in and was like, this is necessary. And now they're like, thank you for making that. So I think that, you know, if that's any lesson, that it does actually really help, even if like it seems like it's kind of a loss leader, right? Because you're like, oh, this is time we could spend on the site. But it actually makes up the time later on, is what I've noticed.
Yeah, what I like about it is it creates an inventory for your site. So if Joe Designer is like, well, I want to redesign the website and make it better in 2 years, they can hop into the style guide and see a list of everything the website kind of depends on right now and either pick and choose and or, you know, kill features or whatever they want to do. But it's all listed right there. It's all very transparent. There's less hidden dragons in your code base.
Yeah, you can't see me right now, but I'm nodding very vigorously.
That's good radio. Good radio.
Good radio. Yeah. Just keep. Yeah, we need some React G for our
audio. Let me do Cold School really quick because I want to thank them for being such a wonderful, good sponsor of a thanks for Cold School to sponsoring. The URL is literally just coldschool.com. And then if you want to be super cool and nice to us, go to codeschool.com/shop talk show for more information and enrolling there because it is an, you know, they have online courses. There's a whole bunch of online courses that are kind of based around fun in a sense, which I really kind of like. So it's an online learning destination for existing and aspiring developers that teaches through entertaining content. Like each course has like kind of a fun theme to it. Like there's this, even our friend Dan Denny has a course in there, unmasking HTML emails that like has this like luchador thing going on that's pretty fun. So we'll teach you all about that. There's, you know, and I like the idea that it's for existing developers and learning developers. So you could come here from scratch if you want to, but I'm sure there's tons of stuff that all of us could learn from in here as well. I mean, like me and Dave and Sarah, I'm sure. I was looking at, like, there's this funny one. Where's the jQuery one I was looking at? jQuery, the return flight. That's kind of good, but it, like, doesn't start with, like, the all of jQuery. Like, one is on Ajax, like advanced Ajax stuff you can do. So it's kind of like a next level jQuery thing. There's a whole thing on promises, which is like, you know, promises are weird and hard. Like I kind of get it a little bit, but I could certainly use a class on promises. That would be pretty cool. Totally available on coldschool.com. Each course features a unique theme and storyline, so you feel like you're playing a game, not sitting in a classroom. And then there's actual like in-browser challenges as you go along with this. So it's not just like watch the video, go to bed. It's like sign up for the course, you know, play the game, watch along, learn from your professor, and then take these in-browser actual challenges to kind of ensure that you learn it. You know, like nobody likes test day, but you kind of do like test day when it's you paying for it and you making sure you want to actually level up and learn what we're supposed to learn. Then tests are pretty kind of great. So there's an iOS app, you know, you can learn that way. It's not just on the web or whatever. More than 1 million people have used Code School. So it's a big deal. Lots of really high quality content on here. Thanks again to codeschool.com for sponsoring codeschool.com/shop talk show.
Rails for Zombies. Do that.
That anyway, was a classic. That was like the... That's how they became who they are.
And they update it. They keep updating it. So it keeps getting better. All right. Robert Kai writes in, animations are becoming popular on the websites. Sorry. I'm a little sick. Getting over it. All right. They grab attention and provide another layer of UX, as mentioned in the recent UX episode. Is jQuery best for that? I've heard of things like GreenSock that supposedly make it easier. How do you go about debugging these animations? Google Designer, Adobe Edge Animate, etc. What other software do you recommend? As far as UX goes, what are some of the pros and cons of having an animation repeat after it has been brought back into a viewport? Let's start with just the is jQuery okay, or should we be using GreenSock, and then what other tools?
Sarah's like uniquely qualified to answer this because she's looked into all this.
Yeah, I actually did benchmark performances of jQuery. It used to be really bad, and you know, I feel bad even saying that because I love jQuery and I, you know, use it all the time. But they are updating it in this new 3.0 release, and I'm so excited about this. They let me talk them into, because I was just so annoying, they let me talk them into supporting class operations on DOM elements. So I would say grabbing a piece of an SVG with jQuery, okay. I haven't yet tested their new request animation frame implementation. I plan to. But in the meantime, I mean, I really think that jQuery is okay and you know, maybe it's better than it used to be, but GreenSock is far better. And you, if you do have existing jQuery, and I'm going to sound like an ad for a second. If you do have existing jQuery animations on your page, you can use a plugin from GreenSock that will just grab all of those animations and overwrite them in GSAP and improve the performance.
Really?
Yeah, it's. I've actually used it on a client site before where I like inherited a lot of code and it was all written in jQuery, and instead of refactoring it all to be GSAP, I was adding GSAP already to do some other animations, so I was like, oh, I'll just add this.
Isn't that kind of like how Velocity was going to do it too, where they just kind of overwrote the .animate API in jQuery?
I think Velocity's plan, and the last time I looked, like, take it with a grain of salt, the last time I looked at the documentation was a while ago, so it might have changed, but their plan and the way that they refactored the code was that the only word you had to change was instead of .2, it was like velocity, you know, like you changed one word and
they
changed.
They used their own API, but all the parameters that you could pass it would digest.
Yeah, so it was like a really easy, like almost find and replace kind of thing where you could just change the code to velocity and it would improve performance. But GSAP worked, like as far as the last version of jQuery and the last version of Velocity, GSAP performs just so much better, especially like on visual tests. And GreenSock just has more tools available than jQuery does at all. And I would say for like prototyping, I don't use After Effects. I know some like Chris Gannon, who's like amazing, and you should definitely check out his work on CodePen also. Chris Gannon uses After Effects sometimes. I actually just debug right in GSAP, and it's not any different from other kinds of, you know, JavaScript debugging, but usually, I mean, I find GSAP pretty easy to use, so it doesn't happen too often that I get stuck. And like, again, the forums are really helpful, but I also think that when I'm just trying to make an animation look good, sometimes I'll, because they allow you to slow down and speed up timelines, I'll slow it way down so that I can see every little piece of it. And that really helps me kind of get a hang of like what the timing is there and like what's really going on.
Well, and that would be an extreme advantage compared to something like jQuery.
Right, right. I don't think that jQuery offers anything like that. Not, you know, you'd write it, of course, but like not in one line of code.
Can I ask, what's the like performance hit for web perf hit for GreenSock? I mean, is it hundreds of kilobytes? Is it like tens? Is it what?
So the Tween Lite, I think, is 4 kilobyte gzip, and then Tween Max, which is, so Tween Lite, you can pretty much do a lot of the stuff that you need except for loops. So Tween Max has a lot of other things, like you can attach things like draggable, and you know, there you like basically you allow for plugin support and you allow for this looping, and that's 20 kilobytes gzip. So it's not that heavy, I feel like. But you can certainly accomplish a ton with just Tween Lite. Like, in most use cases, you shouldn't need something else.
Yeah, and then the 4K sounds amazing. Is pretty low. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want a Tween CSS feature, like if you CSS plugin would be like the only exception to that, you'd have, in order to do CSS stuff, you'd probably have to load that. But I think that's also only 4K gzip. So, like, at most, if you're not doing loops, probably can get away with 8 kilobytes gzipped, which I think is pretty great.
Wow. Wow.
Cool. And then, so Robert was asking about debugging as well, and debugging can be, like, so we covered GreenSock, like, maybe a really cool way to do that is maybe if you don't need the scrubbability, don't load Tween Max, but do load it when you're developing so that you can put in a little scrubber. And gosh, can you imagine a better way to debug animations than having a scrubber to go back and forth? And the scrubber now exists in Chrome DevTools for CSS animations too, which is pretty neat. But you know, then you're in CSS animation land again.
Yeah, I mean, I guess then that's like one animation at a time. And I would say, like, usually you're like, if you're doing a bigger,
I didn't think of that, but you're right.
Yeah, like that, you can have like, you can scrub one in CSS animations in the Chrome DevTools. You're scrubbing one piece of it instead of scrubbing like all of it, and the way it all works together, which is kind of a selling point for Tween Max and Tween Lite. I usually use Tween Max because 20 kilobyte for all of that performance is pretty good, and like you can still get away with a lot of stuff. Plus, SVG is usually pretty performant. Like, it's small if you design it correctly. So, yeah.
So I guess it's like 8 kilobytes, and then the frame rate is using request animation frame, so it's gonna try to draw almost at 60 FPS. Is that's kind of the bonus part two?
I actually don't know if it uses request animation frame. I assume it does. jQuery is the one that's moving to request animation frame. I haven't dug in enough to find that.
I'm sure it does. I don't think there's any alternatives to that, really.
Right. So, but then, like, how does this work on mobile and low-powered devices? Like, do you pull up your animations and they just kind of choke, or how does, what's the typical UX, I guess, on mobile?
Actually, I've had much better luck on mobile with GreenSock, to be honest. First of all, the browser support is much better. So like if I do something complicated on CSS, sometimes I'll open it on Safari, like iOS Safari, and it's just like, oh no, what happened to you guys? when I do stuff on GSAP, it tends to be a lot more stable, but also the frame rate is pretty fast, and I don't have a lot of problems with using GSAP on mobile. I mean, I'm sure that you can find times when you like really tax the DOM and things fall apart, but that's kind of true of any animation framework.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all right. I'm on my iPad mini Gen 1 judging everyone, just so everyone knows.
Chris, didn't you have a tweet that was like, it doesn't work on mobile guy?
Oh, it's just, you get that a lot. You know, you share some article that's not yours. You happen to be on your desktop, so you didn't really notice it sucking. And then you get 3 tweets back of people like complaining about how it doesn't work on mobile. And you're like, you know what? You're right, I guess. I'm not an issue tracker. There's an old Wilto tweet where he's singing about not being an issue tracker, which is one of my favorite tweets of all time.
That's actually in the Twitter bylaws, though. You are responsible for any and all content in links that you post on Twitter, I think.
Oh my God.
You're the sole responsibility.
Well, it's just like one of those things we were talking about earlier, where that the problem is that they're kind of right, you know? But like, that doesn't make it my problem necessarily, you know. It's
we need like an arbiter who just descends down and says, you are right in your justification, your anger is justified, please direct it in a more constructive manner.
There should be maybe one of those one-off pages that it explains.
I could make it thearbiter.com, and then it's just a mage who's just like,
Mine would be IamNotAnIssueTracker.com.
Oh, well, all right. Might have to make some domain purchases this afternoon. Well, I think we're out of time, sadly. But Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We really appreciate it. And thanks. And if people aren't following you and giving you money, how can they do that? And then what is one thing you'd like to plug before you leave the show here?
The person who was talking about my website, you can definitely go there, but I think actually I'm I'm showcasing more of my work on CodePen these days, so probably go to CodePen Estras instead, because all of the stuff that's on the website is also on CodePen. And I think that's it, you know. Like, I guess, like, if people are looking for learning materials, one thing I tell people is to subscribe to newsletters, because some people don't do that, and I find them helpful. But aside from that, I don't have any personal thing I'm needing money for.
What newsletters would you recommend? Because there's a question here we didn't get to, but how do you keep up with industry news?
That literally is about, the answer was going to be signed up for newsletters. So Mike O writes in, what resource do you guys use for breaking news material and industry specific changes and stuff? And what I was going to say was there's newsletters, because there's so many good ones these days. Maybe it deserves a CSS Tricks post, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. I think JavaScript Weekly is awesome. I also really like Shime Vides's, I might be saying his name wrong, Web Platform Daily. And
that one comes every day.
Yeah, and he's really, I think he's really on the ball too. So,
Rachel Labors has an animation specific one.
Web Animation Weekly is great. And actually, Valhead also has a newsletter that comes out. It's not weekly, but it's also really good. Mm.
I could come up with a bunch of them that I like. There's like CSS Weekly and HTML. They're like, I subscribe to 10 of them, I bet, at least, and I like them all. You know, I kind of get excited when they come, which is not the usual case with email. And it's just because I'm like, what did I miss? You know, they end up being, there's almost always at least one link in there. I'm like, ooh. Yep.
Yeah, actually, I made that noise at a bar and people laughed at me. what text message did you get? And it's like, you know, 11:30 at night. I'm like, it's a newsletter on the web, you know. Ooh.
Ooh, laptop.
Oh, look at us. Okay. Well, thanks, Sarah. I think that was good. Feel free to share any cool newsletters in the comments. Be sure to vote this up in your podcatcher of choice. That's how people find out about the show. We really appreciate it. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. People are looking to hire you. I was cruising it just the other day, and there's quite a few really good jobs at brand name companies. That was the best endorsement I've ever given. And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to add there?
Just the JobTalkShow.com.